and the time is 10:02 and 55 seconds. This is the public rulemaking meeting for Washington Administrative Code, or WAC, 458-61A-201, titled Real Estate Excise Tax Gifts. My name is Darius Masudi, and I am a tax policy specialist with the Interpretations and Technical Advice Division of the Department of Revenue, and I am the facilitator for this meeting. So first, we'd like to thank you for taking the time to attend this meeting and for providing us valuable feedback concerning the rulemaking activities for Rule 201, or WAC 458-61A-201. In addition to myself, also in attendance from the Department of Revenue are Atif Aziz in his role as the department's rules coordinator, Kathy Holder, management analyst, and Kathy will be monitoring the recording of this meeting, Kelly Adams, who is an excise tax examiner, Christine Marchisano, a tax admin manager, and I believe Julie Hill, who's an excise tax examiner. So we're conducting this meeting electronically, and we do not have any parties physically present for this meeting. The legal authority for the meeting is from Chapter 34.05 RCW, which is the Administrative Procedures Act of the State of Washington. So this meeting was announced through publication in the Washington State Register as WSR 23-20-060 on September 28th, 2023, and by notification to interested persons through our listserv. The purpose of this meeting is to solicit comments from the public prior to taking action to propose amendments to WAC 458-61A-201, which will also be referred to in this meeting as Rule 201. So copies of this rule are available. You can also email Kathy Holder if you have any issues getting it through our website. So her email is Kathy, CathyH as in Henry, at dor.wa.gov. And you can email her if you'd like to receive a copy of the existing rule or the proposed one. And as I mentioned, the copy of the draft is also on the department's website. So we will consider any comments received relating to the proposed amendments to Rule 201. We appreciate receiving written comments, and we'll evaluate all comments as we proceed with the rulemaking process. We request that you send written comments to my attention by November 1st. So that is 1 week from today. And in this manner, the department can fully consider your comments before proceeding with the future rulemaking activities. That's not to say if you make an oral comment today, we're not going to listen to you, but in a written format, we can just be able to make sure we fully capture everything that you're saying. So now let me briefly outline the rulemaking process and where we are in respect to this rule. So the first step in the process is to file a notice with the code reviser to announce a public meeting, which is this meeting, for the solicitation of comments regarding possible changes to the rule. The notice, which is called a Form CR 101, is published in the State Register and announced through mailings to the interested persons. So we're at that stage right now. The next step will be to file a notice of proposed rulemaking with the code reviser to announce a public hearing on the proposed rule. This notice is called Form CR-102, and it's published in the state register and announced through mailings to interested persons. The purpose of the hearing is to receive further public comments regarding the proposed changes to the rule. And all public comments will be fully evaluated as we proceed in the rulemaking process. Any comments received per the Administrative Procedures Act will be included in the permanent rulemaking file that is kept by the department's Interpretation and Technical Advice Division. And now to the final step that would ha happen, which is to adopt the revised rule. This isn't a public process, but simply requires that we submit the final draft of the rule to the code reviser using a form CR-103. The final rule will be effective shortly thereafter and will be published in the Washington State Register. So now, shifting from the Administrative Procedures Act process to this specific rule and its proposed revisions. So I will provide an overview of the proposed revisions, which are the following. One, clarifying situations where an interest in the property is granted while there is debt remaining on the property. Two, incorporate situations where property is transferred with a mortgage that contains a due on sale clause. So these clauses are a standard term incorporated in federally backed mortgages via uniform instruments. So Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac create uniform instruments. There's also a Washington State version, and they are to be used for any mortgages that the federal government is able to purchase and sell ordinarily. And the final portion would be that recognizing that due on sale clauses can be restrained through federal or state laws in effect at the time of transfer. And so now we will proceed to the comment portion of this meeting. If you have a comment, please identify yourself for the record and any organizations you are representing. As I mentioned, we also appreciate receiving written testimony. If you have written testimony, again, my email is Darius, Darius, M as in Mike, at dor.wa.gov. And then it will be included in the department's permanent rulemaking file, similar to this meeting. So please use the raise hand feature if you have a comment. We'll proceed first to the comments of people directly through the Zoom meeting. And then for people on the phone, then who are not able to raise their hand as easily, we can then have those people comment next. So, are there any public comments? And Kathy will be calling on you.
Looks like we have one from Mark Anderson.
Okay. Hello, Mark.
Hi, Mark Anderson from Anderson Law Firm, PLLC. I previously submitted written comments to you regarding the proposed revisions. There is one aspect of them that seems to show up a couple of times, and that is a distinction between a joint owner and tenants in common, and what their respective ownership interests are. A joint owner owns 100% of the interest in the property. A tenant in common owns a fractional interest based on the interests of the other tenants in common. There are some cases where a joint owner under these examples or in the proposed revision shows a joint owner is only owning 50% of the property. And that is not the case.
Thank you, Mark. And I appreciate you submitting the written comments as well. Any other comments? No. Kathy, is there anyone raising their hand?
No other hands are raised.
Okay. Any final comments that anyone would like to make?
I have Mark again.
Okay. Yes, Mark.
I'm sorry. I guess I could read my comments, but I do have a question. This changing this WAC will also require changing some of the other forms, specifically the supplemental statement. And are there proposed revisions to the supplemental statement that to be consistent with these proposed changes?
Christine, do you have any updates regarding that? If not, we still will. I received your written comments regarding that issue, and that issue is definitely something that is being considered as part of this process, since the supplemental statement also refers to this rule.
So Darius, yes, we would have to look at a revision of the gift supplemental statement form, and that would be done in conjunction with ITA, who is the current author of that form.
Thank you, Christine. And sorry for putting you on the spot.
And perhaps at the same time that a revision to the supplemental statement is considered, perhaps it could be considered to change the language after you've selected debt or no debt consideration, no consideration. If there's no consideration, it truly is a full gift under, I think it's B1. The form then asks, will there be any refinancing of the debt? Well, if there's no debt, that question doesn't apply. However, county assessors have come back and said, you didn't fill in the form because you didn't check one of these boxes. And it makes no sense to check one of those boxes if there's no debt. There are other issues with the supplemental statement, but perhaps they're not germane to this discussion.
Thank you, Mark. And yeah, if you think of anything else, feel free to email me again, and we'll make sure they're included in the rule file.
Will do.
In addition to your comments today. Any other comments? I'm going to do an awkward.
Garen Jones. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Yes.
Raise their hand.
Yeah, this is Garen Jones from Stokes Lawrence. I do estate planning, so I'm really interested if the clarification under Rule 201 for gifts, we might also get an extra example or a clarifying example under the controlling interest provision 4586101 paren 11 talks about some examples where the gifts of controlling interest do not trigger excise tax for entities. And I'd like clarification, even if that entity owns encumbered land that is non-recourse to the donors, it would be very helpful to have some clarification on that.
Just to clarify, you're mentioning Rule 101 and examples within that. that could possibly be also mentioned in this specific rule? Sorry, I just trying to make sure I understand fully.
Yeah, so rule 101 says all other exemptions apply for transfers of business interests. And so we've been able to rely on that for transfer of an LLC or a corporation. With the gift rule talking about if it's encumbered, then it may be deemed for consideration and therefore not a gift. It would be helpful if we can tie those two together, either with an example under 201 or an example under 101. That just goes up a layer of saying it's not person-to-person gift of land, but a gift of an entity that owns land.
Okay. Thank you. And feel free to submit that in writing too, if you would like. Any other comments? I'm going to do an awkward 40 seconds of silence just in case anyone changes their mind.
Mark has raised his hand.
Yes, Mark.
Sorry, me again.
No problem.
What the last speaker was just talking about will also affect 202, I believe, under inheritance or devise. Perhaps, you know, outside the context of straightforward gifting, but in the context of inheritance.
Yeah, so just to clarify, the specific exemptions under the real estate excise tax statutes can potentially operate as like almost like Venn diagram, right? Multiple ones could apply, or certain ones could qualify while the other ones do not, right? So the inheritance provisions operate independently. But I also appreciate you mentioning that as well. Okay. I'm going to do one final 10 seconds of awkward silence, and then we're going to wrap it up. Is there anyone over the phone that is having any issues?
It looks like you have somebody on a chat message.
Someone what?
Somebody has a chat message.
Oh, a chat message? Okay, let me see.
Oh, you just
sorry, the connection seems to be really poor on your end. If you have any, I see your comments. So, okay, our question. I am a sales and use vendor who has tax that are specific to food, property, and income. Why is this? If you could email me your comment. Yes. Hello. Yeah, feel free. Yeah, if the chat works, you could do that. Can give you like another minute. Otherwise, feel free to email me as well. Again, Darius, Darius, m as in Mike at dor.wa.gov. Okay. Any last words?
Thank you for your time.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. Thank you for attending. Okay. Well, I would like to thank everyone for participating. I sincerely do. And your participation is really important. As part of this process, the time right now is 10:23, and the public meeting for Rule 201 is now adjourned.